a very good evening to you. Welcome along to another Sweet and Swing here on Manx Radio. My name's Howard Kane. As usual, my pleasure to invite you to join me for a Friday evening. What have we got? How about some Lou Stone? Haven't heard from Lou for a while. The keyboard wizardry of Zez Comfrey. Some jazz piano, of course. Some Bing, early Bing, maybe. To get us going. A bit of ragtime. But there's no name to this one. So if you know who it is. That's a fine way to get going, it has to be said, doesn't it? A bit of ragtime from a collection from the HMV Jazz label, the Ragtime Jazz Collection. And fascinating, I think this is one of the later ones I rescued from Music Man Towers back in the day. I don't know that we've featured any of that before. I'll keep it in the bag for now, I think, because we might come back to that one. Excellent little essay inside by Roy Carr as well, the excellent jazz commentator and writer, talking about the origins of ragtime and what it is and how it came about. And he sort of says most people quite rightly associate ragtime with the music of course, Scott Joplin, whose famous Maple Leaf Rag was first published in 1899, but whose legend is forever linked now with the use of the entertainer as the main theme for the Hollywood blockbuster The Sting. I remember that, it really, 1973, gosh, I'd be, well, not quite in short pants, but not that old, just into double figures. And it was the first time perhaps I really thought about ragtime. It had been around, obviously, for decades, but it really brought the ragtime sound to the popular, or made it a popular choice, didn't it? It brought it to the fore, and suddenly ragtime was everywhere, and everyone loved the entertainer as if it had just been written. Or in actual fact, it was written well over half a century earlier. He goes on to say, Louis Armstrong's famously replied, if you have to ask, don't ask, when quizzed, what is jazz? Then just as elusive is the question of precisely when jazz took and assumed its recognisable shape. Lots of theories around that. One thing, Roy says, though, is certain. Following the end of the American Civil War in 1865 and the disbanding of both Union and Confederate armies, there was a glut of discarded brass band instruments and marching drums knocking around in the States, particularly in the South. However, stirring military music still had a staunch following and often heard at parades and funerals and at dances. And it was also, he points out, a period when the transient city of New Orleans appears to have been the incubator for this new form of popular music. And despite its reputation as a den of iniquity, New Orleans also supported such cultural attractions as opera companies and various symphony orchestras. Don't think of that, do you? As well as playing host to all manner of venues where people could go to dance. And at that time, another type of music to be heard, ragged time, which soon just became rag time, a marching music hybrid initially performed almost exclusively by vigorous black pianists in sporting house parlours to delight the paying customers there. And then, of course, the itinerant pianist from Texas, one Scott Joplin, spent the first part of the 1890s working around these southern logging camps playing this music. But he wasn't alone. There were others. Tom Turpin, James Scott, Louis Chauvin, Scott Hayden, Artie Matthews. All great musicians playing in this ragged style, the ragtime. But Joplin is the one whose name is forever associated with it. Excellent. Who's the band then? Top marks. You can give yourself a gold star or make yourself a cup of tea or a sherry if you did get that, because I think it would be quite tricky to identify who that was. It was indeed No Name Rag, and it was clarinetist Harry Roy getting us off to a dizzying start. Great stuff. Bit of Bing coming up shortly, and like I said, we also have a bit more jazz piano and Zez Comfrey, one of the keyboard wizards of the Gershwin era. But before that, So Long, Sarah Jane. Sounds quite modern, doesn't it? But here's Ambrose and his orchestra.
Song. some old hand tries to hand you some new line. Though my horse knows what to do, I must still depend on you. Whoa, whoa, giddy up, whoa, giddy up, whoa. If they corner you in some corral and they rope you, I hope you remember you're my gal. So long, Sarah Jane, I must leave you with the prairie and the plain. Don't be staying out too late and don't open up that gate till I giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, giddy up home.
So long, Sarah Jane, I must leave you with the prairie and the plain.
Just be careful as can be and save all your love for me till I giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, giddy up home.
Very nice indeed. It was, of course, the wonderful piano of Teddy Wilson, Where or When. And a fine sound he used to make at the keyboard, it has to be said. And before that, you also had So Long, Sarah Jane, which Ambrose and his orchestra, and Shelton taking the vocals on that one, and a really clear, powerful voice that she had, and another one fairly distinctive, I would say, compared to some of the others, but greater version of that, and a lovely, great voice she's got. Now then, I'm just looking here, because while I was doing that, I'm just trying to set something up. I might have a bit of fun with this one, because I dug out a cassette. A cassette, Grandad? What's one of those? Well, it's what came in after reel-to-reels started to sort of give ways. People wanted something a little bit bigger. Reel-to-reels weren't that easy to actually use or carry round. You had to put the things on the spool and you had to tie them in. And they were big and they came off, you'd be winding them forever, and they weren't very portable at all, etc. So the compact cassette, invented by Philips, I think, came in the late 60s, it would be, somewhere around there, would it? And became very popular for a long time. You might have one at home, gathering dust. I haven't kept all of mine, but I still have quite a few with air shots and things on. And back in the day, you could do a lot of commercial ones. And indeed, I'm very surprised to hear, they've come back into vogue, particularly for demos and such like, with younger bands on cassette. Would you believe that? I certainly didn't when I was told it, but apparently it's true. Anyway, I digress. I have found the Bing Crosby years. And this is songs from the shows and sentimental souvenirs and such like. And yeah, I thought it might be nice to sort of play a little quiz. So I'm going to play you in a minute an early version of, or at least the verse of a song before we get to the chorus, the bit everyone knows. And I'll stop it briefly in between to see if you can shout at the radio to say what the song is. That's what I was vaguely thinking anyway. Just because we can, really, because it's sweet and swing. We can do what we want, can't we? Nothing to say we can't have a bit of fun with the music. I'm always enjoying this music, whatever it is. And by the way, if you've got any thoughts you'd like to let me know about, music you like, music you don't like, someone you'd like to hear, whatever, howardcain@manxradio.com is the address to use. That's Kane with an E, C-A-I-N-E. And I'd love to hear from you. If you want to put pen to paper, you're very welcome to do that as well. It's Howard at Sweet and Swing, Manx Radio Broadcasting House. And that's Douglas Head, Douglas in the Isle of Man. And the all-important postcode, I-M for Mother, 1, 5-B for Bravo, W for Whiskey, 5-B-W. Wouldn't mind a whiskey now. Better not, though. In the meantime, put my mind off it. Here's the Count to Perdido. Oh, yes, as they say, Count Basie with his orchestra. You recognise, I'm sure, Perdido, of course. And taken from Immortal Concerts, one of the Giants of Jazz series, which were great in some ways, in as much as they featured good music. I think they were all legal. I don't think any of them are bootlegs, as far as I'm aware. The recording quality was generally all right, but you got absolutely no notes. So it really didn't tell you much about anything, which never really particularly helped. So I can tell you it was recorded in Stockholm, March the 15th, 1954, but there's nothing on the individual tracks or who's taking solos and such like. But it does give the band, I'll give it that. I won't give you them all, but you'll recognise some of the names there. Benny Powell, Frank Vess, Ernie Wilkins on alto and tenor sax and arranger. Frank Foster arranging some as well on tenor sax. Charlie Fawkes on baritone sax. Count Basie, of course, at the piano. Freddie Green guitar. Gus Johnson, the great Gus Johnson, at the drums. And I think Neil Hefti arranged some of those numbers as well. Good stuff. OK, right, let's have this little game, see if it works. Let's hope the cassette works. You never know, do you? So, like I said, I thought this... here you go, you can hear it. There we go, cassette box. You don't get those many often these days, do you? The Bing Crosby Years, featuring Bob Hope, Judy Garland. Who's that? Dave? Oh, Dixie Lee Crosby, goodness me. Glenn Miller. And, yeah, seems to work. So... Sentimental Souvenirs on side A. Here's the first track. I'm going to play the opening of the song with Bing. Then I'm going to stop it and just for a few seconds to see if you can shout at the radio loud enough for me to hear what the song is. Okay. Deal? Stand by. Here we go.
A long time ago, a million years BC, the best things in life were absolutely free. But no one appreciated a sky that was always blue, and no one congratulated a moon that was always new. So it was planned that they would vanish now and then, and you must pay before you get them back again. That's what storms were made for, and you shouldn't be afraid for.
Afraid for what? Do you know the song? Very well known. He's shouting it out. Da 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 da. I'll leave it there. Do you know it? Of course you do.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven? You'll find your fortune fallen all over town. Be sure that your umbrella is upside down. Trade them for a package of sunshine and flowers. If you want the things you love, you must have showers. So when you hear it thunder, don't run under a tree. There'll be pennies from heaven for you and me. You must have showers, so when you hear it thunder, don't run under a tree. pennies from heaven for you and me.
There now, how about that? Did we enjoy that? Well, I did in any case. Bit of fun. Should we do it again next week? Why not, is what I say. If you agree with me, well, hopefully you do agree with me. I thought it was a bit of fun and lovely to hear Bing. We won't all be Bing. We could have a... Well, maybe we'll all be Bing. Hang on, I better check and see, but I'll happily say all that. I think most of it will be Bing, but it might be Bing with a few others, Tommy Dorsey and Bunny Berrigan. There might be others as well, which would be fun. But, yeah, well, that was good fun. Did you recognise it? Did you get it right? I hope you did. Not always easy, though, is it? These songs, everyone knows. Da, 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 da. But how many people know the introduction and the actual verse rather than the chorus and the intros? Not that many. This is often the case. Listening to Sweet and Swing with myself, H. Lovely to have your company, as always. Still to come, a bit of Zez Comfrey, the keyboard wizard, and some Lou Stone. But before that, Am I Blue? Well, not really. However, Ben Selvin might be. First band leader to ever produce a million seller, would you believe? Ben Selvin died over 40 years ago in 1980, but his 1919 composition, Dardanella, well, that was it, hit over a million. He was responsible for the production of over 9,000 records and in his time employed some of the best sidesmen in New York for his session groups. Am I Blue was sung by Ethel Waters originally in the 29 Warner Brothers review On With The Show. And there we heard the wonderfully named Smith Ballou taking the vocal in Selvin's version. and also on trombone, one Tommy Dorsey, Esquire. Yeah, all-star lineup, isn't it? Million seller. Who'd have thought that was the first million seller? The Dardanella. Not I, as they say. Now then, keyboard wizardry. This is Zez Comfrey, another one that I think was one of the last ones I unearthed from Music Man Towers before we got everything out. I rescued it from obscurity or being given away or sold off or whatever the case may be in any case. And possibly best known for Kitten on the Keys, of course. Sounds easy, very difficult piece to play from all accounts. Remember the old maestro himself saying, not easy this piece. I never mastered it, nowhere near. We might feature that, but I could go for it, but I thought we'd go for something a little bit different, because Kitten on the Keys is his best known ones, and it's sometimes nice to play some of the lesser known ones. Not always, but sometimes. What about this one? Nickel in the Slot. Great stuff, and you probably got the idea of just how hard some of those pieces are actually to play. Interesting character, Zez. Great name, obviously, Zez Comfrey. I assume Zez was short for something, I'm not 100% certain. But a wonderful, it's from the sublime to the ridiculous, as they say, in as much as you get very little liner notes on some, such as the Giants of Jazz, in this one on the Pearl label. Way back when, well, probably about 30, 40 years ago, there's a veritable essay stretching over 6 or 7 pages on Zez, and very interesting reading it is too, remarking about the, well, as it says, few events in the 20th century American music as widely celebrated as the concert that took place in New York's Aeolian Hall on the 12th of February 1924. It was titled An Experiment in Modern Music, and perhaps that performance best known for launching Rhapsody in Blue, George Gershwin's now iconic piece, perhaps the most familiar concert work ever composed by an American, who knows. Less frequently noted, however, was the presence on that stage of pianist and composer. Yes, in fact, here we go. Here is my answer in that it is Elzear. I've never heard of that. If that was his full name, Edward Elzear Confrey. So Zez was short for Elzear. Is that a Jewish name? Might be, I'm not 100% certain. Who, in the original advertisements for the concert in 1924, received equal billing with Gershwin. And yes, how many people remember Zez Confrey compared to George Gershwin? It's often the way it goes. It's a fickle old thing, fame and history. At the time of that concert, Zez himself was a major celebrity and quite a potent force in American popular music, and his very syncopated piece, as we were mentioning earlier on, Kitten on the Keys, had been published 3 years earlier and had sold over a million copies of Kitten on the Keys. He'd been featured on nearly 36 sound recordings, on over 100 piano rolls, you forget how popular they were back in the day, and all his popular songs were widely performed. He was in continuous demand as an accompanist, as a band leader, a radio artist, and no less a personage than Paul Whiteman dubbed him America's finest pianist. And yet now, how often do we say this on Sweet and Swing? And yet now, it's just unfair the way that some people are completely become famous through the years, or stay famous through the years, shall we say, like Gershwin, and others, massively popular and famous in their times, every bit as talented, but they just fade into comparative or complete obscurity. I would say comparative for Zez. He's not in complete obscurity, but compared to Gershwin, you could argue perhaps he may as well be. Fascinating, isn't it? Great piece, though. We better move on, otherwise we'll run out of time, won't we? Harry Parr Davies is another one. Songs from the Shows. I thought this would be a nice one to dip into from time to time. We could sing as we go. Could be the title of this programme from time to time, couldn't it? Sing as we go. I like to think you sing along to some of them in any case. In this case, it is Eve Beck with Louis Levy from The Last War, 1946.
Hello, everyone. Louis Levy speaking. I want you to imagine for a moment that you're sitting in your favourite music hall. England's greatest present day star is on the stage, and she announces her next item as follows. The next song I'm going to sing is by the little lad that mucks about at the piano. Then you'll probably guess why I start my biography this evening with Sing As We Go.
Sing as we go and let the world go by. A song will march along the highway. Say goodbye to sorrow. There's always tomorrow to think of today. Sing as we go, although the skies are gray. Beggar or king, you've got to sing today.
Thank you.
two for the price of one there. Sing as we go, Eve Beck with Louis Levy from our wartime radio broadcast of 1946, and then straight into Bluebird of Happiness with, of course, R. Gracie. Who else could it be? Trying to keep the home fires burning and spirits up. Never easy, particularly, I think, if you aren't old enough like me to have lived through that time. I mean, I can get depressed just sort of looking at the weather sometimes, so how people manage to stay positive or keep going through 7 years of war is beyond me. I'm just glad I was born afterwards rather than before or even during. Got to be thankful for mercies like that, haven't you? It has to be said. Now then, I promised you some Lou Stone, and if I don't hurry up, I won't get him in. We haven't had Lou on for quite some time, have we? From a series of Dance Band Delights. Fine player, lots of tracks I could go for. Some are, most of them I don't actually recognise that much, so I'm almost going to plump for one at random. What about this one from 1937? Ebony Shadows. That one, Ebony Shadows, Lou Stone, has a distinctly modernistic feel to it, I think, that one, despite the cracks and the hisses and pops from the transcription from the original 78. Lou Stone, born Louis Steinberg in Bethnal Green in 1898, came from a Jewish refugee family who'd fled from Eastern Europe and changed their name after the First World War, which sadly claimed the lives of two of Lou's three brothers. And he started out, what he really wanted to be, was a football player. I suppose lots of young kids did, didn't they? Played football and did play the piano, though, and went on to become one of the finest dance band arrangers of his generation, whose talents were sought out by many other famous band leaders of the time, including the likes of Bert Ralton or Ambrose, John Furman, the Sterita brothers. But it was Roy Fox that he suddenly was catapulted into the limelight with Roy, because when the American went to Switzerland to recover from illness, pianist and arranger Lou, who had put the band together in the first place, became their elected leader at the Monseigneur restaurant. And Fox returned from Switzerland, having recovered, only to discover, must have been a shock to the system, Lou Stone Man was getting great guns and he was temporarily out of a job. It's a cutthroat business. The music business is now, was then, as they say. It reminded me, listening to the Pops and Crackles there, I was going to mention earlier on when we were listening to Zez Comfrey, again from a much earlier recording. Right, there's an engineer's note attached to it saying, and talking about the work that has to go on sometimes when they're transferring material from the original 78. And it says, and this was for the Zez, but could equally apply, I dare say, to some of the Lou Stone material. Source material for the Zez came from commercially issued 78 RPM shellac pressings. Shellac, brittle as anything, wasn't it? And unique glass-based lacquers. The shellac pressings varied in quality. As a result, certain noises and stripped grooves could not be fully eliminated. Those extra loud steel needles doing their damage. And without compromising the musical integrity of the original performance, the glass-based lacquers, one-of-a-kind items, suffered from distortion. Additionally, in the case of the glass-based Della Robbia, which was track 26 on the Zez Comfrey, it says the disc was broken almost cleanly in half. And removing the tick and residual thumps left by this crack required nearly 100 digital edits. Happily, they're fairly quick to do these days, so it's amazing how quickly you could clean it up. It also adds on the case of Zez Comfrey. One of the tracks, it says, was ended a few measures short of the end of the composition, and in order to complete the selection, it was necessary to clone an earlier passage and stick it on. Ah, well, such is life, as they say. A bit of Willie Lewis and his orchestra to finish us off this evening. Say You're Mine.
Thank you.
very nice too. Willie Lewis, Say You're Mine, All Mine. No doubt, no listing on the singer on that one. Willie Lewis himself, an American jazz clarinetist and band leader, born in Texas, grew up in Dallas and played in a variety of shows over the years. Sadly, you're not mine for very much longer, because it's rapidly coming to that time where I have to hand over. Don't know where the time goes sometimes. Jumping in next week, of course, with Brother Chris. I'll be back with Sweet and Swing in a couple of weeks. Look after yourselves. Drop me a line if you want, and I'll see you then. Cheerio.